And tonight we'll talk about the Aura Advantage. Cynthia Sue Larson with us, and get ready. We're going to talk about reality and shifts and everything else on Coast to Coast AM. Cynthia Sue Larson, author and intuitive life coach. She helps people transform themselves from accidental manifestators into conscious reality shifters. We're going to find out what that all means. Cynthia has written books and articles about the ways of consciousness and how it changes the physical world. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Cynthia, how are you?
Cynthia. Great to be on the show.
Yeah, good to have you with us. Tell me a little bit, what is the difference between reality shifters and accidental manifestors?
Well, basically, accidental manifesting would be in the realm of when you lose a sock in the laundry and you don't know what happened to it, it's just completely vanished. And the darndest thing, because you can search everywhere and it's just not anywhere that it could be. I mean, it's not in the washing machine, not in the drying machine. It's gone.
Where is it? That's the thing. Where do these things go? Where do the keys go?
Exactly. That's the other one. Missing keys. And it's the kind of thing that can drive you crazy when you're in a big rush and you need to find them, but they're gone. And it seems like that's when it's most likely to happen. It's when you're feeling like you don't have any time to deal with this. So where do they go? That's a great question. Basically, there are lots of theories about where they go. I would like to bring up some of the physics behind it. I don't want to jump right into that, but we're going there.
We'll come back to that if you want.
Okay.
We'll write that down. Now, you wrote a book called Aura Advantage. Tell me about that. What's that mean?
Yes. That's a book that I wrote to describe the energy that each one of us has, and it's something that some people can see. Most children have the ability to see energy fields. Some people believe it's because they're nearsighted, so before their eyes properly focus and look at the things we expect them to see, most children are seeing and reading energy. And you might remember that when I can think back to when I was an infant and I would see colors just moving into the room in advance. Before my mother came into the room, I'd see the energy. And it would be in beautiful colors. And if there was something that was dissonant, like there was about to be an item that's falling on the floor, something is being dropped, before I even heard the noise, I would see a very dissonant, sharp, erratic kind of energy wave of color that looked kind of jagged. And then I'd hear the noise. So I think most of us are tuned into that. We often get a feeling of things right before they happen because we are intuitively picking up on that energy, which we can feel in advance of things actually occurring.
Tell me about the colors of the auras.
Okay. Well, basically the colors that we see in the visible spectrum range from red at one end to violet at the other, and those colors are often associated with tendencies that people have to be, in the case of red, very energetic. And then moving up toward the very high level of vibration of violet, which would be very spiritual and intuitive, with a wide variety of things in between. So there's just a lot of variation. And some people have many colors at one time. Most people tend to be one particular color. They might be a true blue person. And someone who's actually very blue is the kind of person you can talk to. You feel safe confiding in them because they're very balanced. They're very good at communicating, and you know, typically they're in that beautiful deep blue color. So
let's talk more about these colors. Explain the colors and what they all mean, if you would.
Okay. Well, starting with red, that's often a color that people vibrate with to a large degree when they're very physical, very active. They like to do things. And this is something that you might see people wearing their favorite color. So if they wear a lot of red, there's a good chance that they actually have red in their energy field as well. So that's a very active person that wants to keep doing things. It's the friend that says, what are you doing today? What are you doing tomorrow? They don't want to just sit around and hang out. They might be constantly doing projects with their home, that kind of thing.
How many people sense auras?
Well, like I said, most children are very good at it. And it seems like it's something that we get trained out of us. So the more we get into our rational, analytical way of thinking, we can kind of detach from it. So I believe most of us, a large majority, have the ability to see auras. And I found that to be true when people take classes to see the energy field. Even if people think they can't do it, as long as they're open-minded, a large majority, like 80, 90% of the people actually can see auras.
Do they have anything to do with other dimensions, or are they attached to us and they always were there?
That's a really good question. Now, you know that currently physicists are looking at the theory of everything, and it looks like there's a good chance that our universe exists in something like 10 dimensions. So when you think about energy and auras as being something that supposedly we can't see, even though scientists know for a fact that our fingertips and our hands are actually emitting photons. That's been scientifically observed by, in Japan, a man named Mitsuo Hiramatsu, for example. He's actually measured the photons coming out of the fingertips, out of the fingers, palms of the hand. But usually we don't see these things. And so when you wonder, how can I see this stuff? How can I be seeing energy? Then there's a good chance that we're picking it up intuitively, that it's something that we are aware of. Some sense beyond these so-called five senses. We actually have a lot more senses than five senses. We can sense time, and we can sense all kinds of things, you know, beyond just touch, sight, smell, and so forth.
How come some people, though, can't feel this, can't sense it?
Well, like I said, usually our society trains us to be focusing on certain things that we have words for, that we communicate about, that we pay attention to. And so then we tend to atrophy a lot of our other nonverbal communication skills and abilities, such as we might need if we were communicating with people that don't speak our language. So you will find that people who do speak to people from other cultures, who travel to places where there's no language in common, they will be relying upon what you might call telepathy, which is actually relying upon this shared consciousness or entanglement of ideas between a couple of people. So you can transmit visual impressions. You might be thinking of an image and be sending that image. And if you're a strong sender, because you practice doing that, and the other individual is a strong receiver, then you can receive that. This is how things like animal telepathy are possible, where you can communicate with animals and, like I said, people that don't know the same language.
The aura advantage, of course, to me, tells me that if somebody has this ability to sense this, that they have a step up in life. Is that a pretty good guess?
Absolutely. And the whole reason that I've used that term, aura advantage, is because a lot of people think that the aura is just pretty colors, that it's something that you look at and that's all there is to it, or perhaps it tells you about personality, but they think that's all it is. Actually, there's a lot more than that, because the energy field gives you the ability to have a sense of good fortune and luck, good health, and the ability to communicate clearly, as well as attract what you most desire, protect yourself in dangerous places and times, where people that don't have this ability would be not in making good decisions and so forth. So you can also non-locally affect others. You can find lost things. You can accurately assess your environment and be at the right place at the right time.
Now, when you talk about dangerous places, are we talking about on the astral plane or other dimensions? Where?
No, I mean literally just dangerous situations. There's a really interesting story that was told some time ago. This is a situation that happened that Edgar Cayce heard about from a woman who had been shopping in a department store, and she was looking for some red sweaters that caught her attention. But then the elevator bell dinged, and she thought, well, I'll move on to the next floor. But she was just stopped in her tracks, because when she looked at the people in the elevator, she saw something just felt really wrong. And later she described the people in the elevator as having no auras. And then when the doors closed, she didn't get into the elevator, but it just fell straight down. This was back in the days before the safety catches and brakes were installed on elevators, so they wouldn't just drop just at a horrifying speed, too fast. And people were killed in that elevator. So
That's right.
She really did save her life by not getting into the elevator at that time.
Well, it's an incredible tool. Tell me a little bit about the research that's going on with some of the other people out there, like Dean Radin.
Yes. Dean Radin is wonderful. He works at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. He's the mm-hmm. chief scientist there. And while he doesn't say that he's working on anything specifically called an aura or an energy field, actually what he is doing is a lot of work in the field of consciousness. So he's showing that all of the perceived separation that we see between people and so forth is very illusory, that actually there's a great deal of non-local observation happening, and there are such things as distant intention. There's a sense of being stared at that can be demonstrated scientifically. He's just doing lots of experiments that show what I would call this proof of entanglement, proof of what I call energy cords between individuals. There really is a web of life. We're all connected to one another. And when you can see auras, you don't just see this beautiful sphere of light around a person, but you can often see the energy connections from one individual to another. And so when there's a strong entanglement and there's a strong connection, such as can be formed intentionally through two people that are close to one another, then this can be demonstrated in the laboratory that one person can feel when the other one is staring at them, even though one participant is in a Faraday cage that prevents any kind of electromagnetic field from penetrating it.
Now, you're a physicist, right? You got your degree from Berkeley.
Yes, I studied at UC Berkeley.
Now, tell me how you have used that degree into what you're doing now.
Well, I find this time in 2013 to be one of the most phenomenal times in all of human history. We're now about 100 years post this discovery of quantum, which was what Max Planck coined the term quanta to describe something that's quantifiable. It's just this one element. So it's this one unseparable individual thing that we can hold and look at. Well, actually, it's too small to hold and look at, but we can study it scientifically. So the reason I find that so fascinating and so amazing right now is that many of the things that I talk about and share on my Reality Shifters website are hundreds and hundreds of stories from people around the world that are noticing things appearing, disappearing, transporting, transforming, and changes in the experience of time. And what all of these experiences have in common, all of these reality shifts have in common, is that they are showing that the same things that we would observe on the quantum scale, such as quantum tunneling, quantum teleportation, quantum entanglement, quantum coherence, these things are happening on the macro scale.
Would that include, Cynthia, for example, not missing keys or anything, but, you know, let's say, you know, you have a lamp. You wake up in the morning and the lamp is tilted and tipped over, and there's no way it could fall. There's no way. And there was nobody else in the house. How in the heck could that happen? I mean,
absolutely.
Some entity, some force obviously moved it over. Is it like that?
Yes, exactly like that. So it's the kind of thing that when you might wake up and find things, it's like you had poltergeist in the house and things are all disturbed, but nobody came into the house. That could happen, and it's been known to happen, actually. So it's kind of a strange phenomenon. A lot of teenage children have this sort of experience happening in their homes because they are going through a change in their energy field right when they go through puberty. And so there's not so much grounding of their energy, but there's a great rush of energy, and it definitely contributes to that effect.
Nothing happened to me. I wonder if there's anything wrong with it.
I don't think so.
No.
I was thinking of physicist Michael Talbot. He writes about that happening to him in his book about the holographic universe. And it's kind of interesting because wherever he went, that kind of PK effect would follow him.
What about people who are either possessed or they're somewhat demonic? you know, we've been talking about these great things happening to good people. But
right.
what about evil people? What about demons? Do they still go through this?
You mean the people, or is that what you're talking about?
The individuals themselves who just, I would just say they're pure evil. Do they still have the ability to see auras? Are their auras a different color? What's going on with them?
Right. Okay. Well, in the case of people that have allowed negative energy to entangle with them, shall we say, it's like getting dirty. It's like these are people that have really gotten dirty with their energy, and that is what it looks like, the people that can read energy fields. So when you see people, if you're able to see energy, and you see someone that normally their energy would look red, but in the case of someone who's been drinking a lot of alcohol to the point that they're drunk or they're doing drugs, something that dirties up their energy field, weakens their energy field, and allows them to be taken over by some negative entity. This is the shamanic view, is that some people can just get taken over by demons, by negative entities, and get sickened by it.
Why? Because
their energy field would get quite dark. Yes.
Why do they get taken over?
Well, it's, think of the energy field like being the skin on your body. You would want your skin to be healthy and intact. You wouldn't want holes to develop, which would be the equivalent of getting skinned knees and having sores and openings all over your skin. The skin is the largest organ in the human body, and it provides us with this very strong barrier to germs and disease. Similarly, the energy field that goes around your body needs to have a very strong exterior to it so that it can be resilient and it can repel things that don't do any good for you. So it's really important to be able to accept the energy that's good for you, just like you eat good food. You wouldn't want to eat something that's poisonous or questionable. When you open the refrigerator, when in doubt, throw it out. You know, if it smells funny or looks funny, you need to do the same thing with energy, with all of the ideas and feelings that you accept into your own energy sphere.
Some science.
Go ahead, finish. So the importance of keeping that outer layer of the energy field impenetrable to negative entities is that you're just keeping it just smooth, like the skin on your body. So if you go swimming, you don't get contaminants getting inside your skin. And what happens when I was mentioning people drink alcohol or they take a lot of drugs, they are weakening the outer layer of their energy field. It becomes quite permeable. It gets holes in it. And the bigger the holes are, then the easier it is for some opportunistic entity or negative energy to permeate, to intrude and create havoc.
Well, so that's one of the reasons when their guards are down, if they're drinking or drunk, that's when these entities can take them over?
Exactly, yes.
That's pretty dangerous, isn't it?
It is dangerous.
You know, the other shifts, you know, when you call these reality shifts that are out there, I mean, who manifests them, or does it just happen?
That's a great question. Most people actually experience reality shifts. I did a survey back in the year 2000, and I wanted to know what were the most common kinds of reality shifts, what were the least common, and I was wondering how prevalent the whole phenomenon really was, because at that point I was getting a couple of years worth of stories from people that were sharing them with me that I was posting on the website. So when I conducted the survey, I found out that out of hundreds and hundreds of people, the most common thing that people were experiencing was coincidences and synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
95% of the population experiences coincidences and synchronicity.
Well, and I don't believe in coincidences. I would call something else, like fate or something.
Right. Well, I believe it's meaningful. So when I'm using these words, it's just so that we have common language and people, they generally know what that means. And the fact that it's 95% of the people are experiencing this, then obviously there's something going on.
Oh, yeah, that's huge. We're going to come back with you in a moment, Cynthia, on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to talk with you. We're going to take your calls about some strange events that might have happened to you, missing keys that just pop up, things like that. Check in with us. We'll be back in a moment as we talk more about the Aura Advantage on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Cynthia Larson with us. We're going to take your calls. Strange things happen all the time. And these things that happen, Cindy, they happen to people at the strangest times, don't they?
Well, they can. It seems like some of the things happen spontaneously, and others happen when there is a remarkable situation occurring, like someone's about to be in an accident, they're about to have a car speeding toward them, and the next thing they know, it's like they're nowhere near where they had been. They've sort of teleported, or somehow they've gone through a barrier. This kind of thing is pretty typical of a lot of accidents, and people don't know how to describe it. It sounds crazy if they tell the police officer, I was literally here on this side of the barrier. The next thing I know, I went right through it. The whole car went right through it. But these things actually happen very frequently.
Or, like they dematerialize.
Yeah, it's just exactly like they're there 1 minute, and then they've gone right through a wall. Or else a speeding truck was coming directly at them, and then they just figure they're done for. This is the end. And the next thing they know, they're okay. And the truck is on the other side of them. It's like, what happened? That's impossible, but they're still here.
Yeah, those are just remarkable stories. We get them all the time here on the program where two cars are coming right at each other and they just go slowly through each other and out the other side and they're not touched. I mean, I find that bizarre, but I do hear those stories.
Now, when you realize that exact description of what we're talking about is extremely common on the quantum level, and you realize that we live in a universe of probabilities where things may not happen a lot, but you can expect to see them occasionally, then you would expect to see a lot of these quantum phenomena on the macro scale. And it's turning out that many of these effects are turning up in biology increasingly. It seems like all of the photosynthesis properties. When we see plants photosynthesizing, most likely they're using quantum coherence, quantum entanglement to choose the most efficient pathways to take a photon and turn it into energy that the plant can use, for example.
What is causing these things to happen? Let's assume for a moment that they are happening, right? That the keys disappear and then they materialize and strange things like that. Some of the other examples that you cited. Why? Right. Why is it happening?
It's happening. Why is a good question, because it depends on the situation. In the case of life or death, then it would be happening so that someone would be, like I said, teleported to safety. But if you're asking why does it happen when you have no clue why it's happening, I think that's what you're really asking. Like, why does it happen when you don't know what just went on there? Like, why are my keys suddenly gone? And then they reappear. Is that what you mean?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's like you know where you put them, and you look there, and you can't see them. I mean, do the eyes play tricks on you where, you know, it's right under your nose syndrome, or is it something else?
Well, what I say in my book, Reality Shift, is this happens because, and that's two words, B-E, and then C-A-U-S-E, because. It's to remind us to be causative in the world, to be beings of intention, to recognize that the way we think and the way we feel is absolutely changing our physical reality. We often seem to be very, very sleepy. We're like sleepwalkers. We don't seem like we're clear on the fact that the way we focus our minds and the way we focus our intention and our feelings makes a huge difference. And you can feel it when you're talking to somebody and you can tell they're not really listening to you. Their mind is elsewhere. It's very frustrating. You know, you want to get through to them, but obviously they're not paying attention at all.
No, not at all. We're with Cynthia Sue Larson, author of several works, Aura Advantage, Reality Shifts as well. When you were writing Reality Shifts, did you come across anything that even baffled you, Cindy?
Absolutely, yes. I noticed as I was writing the book, it seemed like more and more different types of reality shifts would occur. And so I would see, for example, a book that I'd been reading. It was a children's fairy tale, and I would read it every single day to my daughter. And one day the illustration changed. It was just a book, The Three Billy Goats Gruff. And I'd always felt like it was frustrating that I couldn't really see the troll as the billy goat gave him a bump off the bridge. in that pivotal scene. And then the next thing I knew, the book showed a very large troll. And so that's just one example. And I had no idea at the time that a book could change. I've since witnessed several books change. It seems like when you get frustrated with something and feel like, I wish that was a better book, and you come back to it, it just might be a better book. So I had no idea that you could have an intention and then get a change that obviously affected the past. It's like you're on suddenly a very different time stream. It's like movie reels, and you've spliced from one movie into another and just made a leap of consciousness, and there you are.
I've got to ask you this. Some people are seeing people who have died wandering around, not like a ghost thing coming to visit, but I mean, they actually see dead people walking around. What's going on there?
Now, if you're talking about the phenomenon that is called the alive again phenomenon, that's another way to put it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this is very common with celebrities such as Nelson Mandela. I remember many, many years ago hearing that he had died while he was still in jail, and I was devastated. I thought,
he's still alive.
Yes, he is now. But I'm not the only one that remembers hearing reports of his death. And this wasn't just some random offhand report. This was something, it was a big media event. And I thought, no, that can't be right. That's terrible. And now it's not right. And obviously I'm in a universe where he's still alive. Jane Goodall is another one. I was devastated to hear that she had died. And currently I hope she's still alive right now.
I think she's dead.
Okay, you think she's
dead. But I have to check. And then what about Jack Palance?
There we go. That's another one. And
I think he's alive, but people killed him off too.
Right. Well, he was the one that people had heard that he had died, and then he was alive again. Yes. There are quite a few like this. Larry Hagman is currently dead, but there was a while that he was actually alive, but people remembered that he'd died, and I was one of them.
All right, are we talking about shifts between other dimensions, the multiverse, maybe, perhaps, some overlap?
Right.
What's causing this?
Okay, when you look at quantum phenomena and what's happening there, physicists have exactly the same question. They want to know, why is there such spooky action at a distance occurring? And there are some top theories that I like a lot. One of them would be many worlds interpretation by Hugh Everett III, and that's a theory that it's the multiverse that you're talking about, where we have many, many worlds, and then the kind of jump of consciousness from one reality to another is possible. Another possibility would be the transactional interpretation. This is physicist John Kramer's idea that the past and the future can have a handshake and make an agreement about how things are going to go. So you can literally change the past.
My producer, by the way, says Jane Goodall is still alive, 79, living in the United Kingdom. So
wonderful. Well, I'm glad to hear it.
But you're right. People seem to get killed off, and then they come back again.
Right.
It's weird.
Quite a lot. And in my book, Reality Shifts, I actually observed a pet cat that my roommate had for many years. I heard that he had died. His name is Ashes. And my roommate told me she was devastated. He'd crossed the street, and he'd been run over by a car. And I had moved to another apartment just across the street from where I had been living, directly across the street. And one day, this is some time later, many weeks, maybe a month or two later, I saw Ashes, the same exact cat that I had heard had died, came to visit me. And he was a real cat. I mean, this is not a ghost cat.
I love it.
He looked a little dirty. He hadn't been washing himself.
Scruffy, so. Yeah.
He looked kind of creaky and elderly, a little arthritic, but definitely still Ashes.
All right, we've got a whole bank of phone calls here for you, Cynthia, so let's go to the phones now. Matt in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? It's an excellent show tonight, by the way. The question I had for Cynthia is kind of deep here, but I'm kind of wondering, I think about these things a lot, and I'm wondering if we as a species, a human species, I wonder if we are ready to scientifically delve into these things and start running experiments. I mean, we're talking about multi-dimensions here. We're talking about particles of space, all this. I mean, we've just built the Hadron Super Collider in Switzerland or someplace like that. But, you know, where we can actually open up major black holes in a contained environment and study the Big Bang and stuff like that. And I'm wondering, Cynthia, I'm wondering if you or your colleagues have ever done any ethics research or what if scenarios. How far is our science going to go, and if we are intellectually mature enough to even handle some of this stuff? I mean, could we accidentally time shift the entire planet? You know, but I'll let you get back. I'll let you get back and answer that. Anyway, thanks a lot, George. Good night.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Go ahead, Cindy.
That is a deep question, Matt. I'm glad that you called and asked about that. And that's a good question. Well, we're talking about the possibility of many parallel universes in a multiverse. And so just as it's possible that we could adventure into something that's quite disastrous, it's also, just as we're noticing and talking about all these near collisions where people call into the show and they say, I was just about hit by a Mack truck, but somehow, like time slowed down, we passed through each other, and I was on the other side. I believe that through intention, we can actually visualize a better possibility and find ourselves there. And so that's why I really recommend people ask the question, how good can it get? And let your imagination go in a good direction. It's very important to keep your mind open to those possibilities. And it's interesting you mentioned that Large Hadron Collider, because they were looking for that Higgs boson and hoping to find lots of other particles because it would have made it a very simple universe. But now it seems like we're a very bizarre universe because they didn't find a lot of the mid-range particles they were hoping to find. So with that right there is giving us a lot of weight to the possibility of this multiverse, the many worlds interpretation of Hugh Everett III. So we've gained a little bit of traction for many worlds for the multiverse.
All right. We've got Frederick in Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, Frederick, go ahead. Thanks.
Surprised I got on this bastard. I'm really glad. I've tried several times. But anyway, I was just noticing in the conversation that she didn't mention the actual physical evidence that's indisputable, such as Kirlian photography that does photograph auras through yes. Ultra high frequency photography, radiation photography. And that shows that there is an aura. For example, I don't want to take up too much of your time or any of your other guests' time, but if you take a leaf and cut it in half and you photograph it under a Kirlian photography system, it will show the entire leaf. Half of it will be energy. Half of it will be matter. And I just wanted to wonder how she could address that. And also, I think the big problem that I see in all of these discussions is a matter of vocabulary. We need to establish new words, new vocabulary to describe this. Dimension means nothing to me. It doesn't adequately describe the inner reaction between the 4.9% of the universe that is actual visible physical matter and the rest of the universe, which is, I believe, 60-something percent dark
matter.
Energy, they call it, and whatever, dark matter. But we are only existing in, according to the last Discover magazine, 4.9% of the universe is all that we know. So what's with the rest of it? There must be something else. So we are like... see, I'm at a loss for vocabulary now, but
well,
anyway.
But that could be where the multiverse comes in. What do you think of that, Cynthia, that the multiverse is definitely a factor, the theory that there are many universes stuck together like bubbles?
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And this whole matter, the question of dark matter is one that we're still working out, as well as what are those other dimensions like? How can we sense them? These are more questions than we have answers for right now. But I'm really glad you mentioned the information about the Curlian photography. If we can just go back to that, I've got an entire chapter in Aura Advantage that covers the history of aura photography. And I love the story about the Curlians, where a Soviet scientist came to them. This is in the 1940s, and they were testing out their Curlian photography equipment and picked up some leaves from a Moscow greenhouse to interpret what these Curlian photographs of the leaves would come out to be. And they found that one leaf image was bright and had roundish spherical flares scattered symmetrically. The other one was very dim, and it had dark figures sparsely scattered across the image. And when they showed these images of the two leaves from the greenhouse, to the scientist from Moscow, he was ecstatic. He said, "You found it. One of these plants was contaminated with a disease, and you found this out immediately." And so that really was a validation for the work of the Curlians. And it really moved things forward in the Soviet Union. And there's still a lot of research being done in Russia today with Curlian photography in the areas of health. It's something that people can do fingerprint analysis and determine very easily what kind of health issues they might have. This is all covered in, I have a whole big chapter on this in Aura Advantage.
Do you see auras or feel them?
I mostly feel them. But if I really focus and the background isn't too distracting, I can see them as well. But it's not my strong suit. I do better with my eyes closed, actually, because I can see the things using intuitive sensing. You might think of it as a third eye. So it's where I lose all the distraction of my visual range entirely.
Have some of these tools helped you in your day-to-day life?
Yes. I used to work at Citibank in the 80s. Yeah, I was a project manager there, and I seemingly could do the work of maybe 10 or 15 people. I wasn't really doing that much work, but what I was able to do is quickly, just at a glance, tell which of the projects I was working on had energy to them and which ones were already dead on arrival. And so I never wasted time on the projects that look dead to me. They had no energy. I would turn in the weekly report, but there wasn't much to say because and it was just a better use of my time. So I
never
would
come
the things that were moving forward and get a lot done that way.
Ever come across psychic vampires in your career?
Definitely, yes. But the best thing to do with people like that is just remember what we were talking about with that the skin on your body and having a very resilient outer layer of your energy field. So you just don't need to spend a lot of, you don't need to get entangled with those people. So ideally you would minimize interaction, stay focused on what you're doing, and not get sucked into all the drama, the politics, the intrigue.
Well, that's true. Cynthia, if people want to email you or get a hold of you, where do they go? How do they get to you?
Okay, best way is through my website, which is realityshifters.com, and my email is cynthia@realityshifters.com.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We are going to take some final phone calls and stories. I want you to share stories. I mean, have you gone through a car and you thought you were going to get killed in an accident? Talk about some of that when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM.